Now we're holding on Zion Amud Aleph, the first Mishnah. Here we're pretty much done talking about Edom Zomimin specifically, so now let's talk about a little bit as far as the dinim of Edus in general. The Mishnah says, Mishin Nigma Dino, a person where he was convicted in Beis Din, or Barach, and then he ran away, or Baldifne Oisiv Beis Din, and he comes back in front of that same Beis Din, Ein Soisrin Es Dino, we don't undo the din, we don't say, in other words, well, let's revisit the case and see, maybe we can find some kind of reason to exonerate him. No, we just go according to, they just go according to their original decision and take it from there. And continues the Mishnah, Kol Mokum Sheyamdu Shnayim V'Yomru, and also in any case where two Edim come to a Beis Din and say, Me'idim Onu B'ish Ploini, Shenigma Dinei V'Beis Din, Shoploini, where they come and give Edos about somebody about Ploini, that he was convicted in such and such a Beis Din, Ploini Edov, and that they identify that Ploini and Ploini were the Edim, so they're saying, we're not the original Edim on whose testimony he was convicted. But we were there at the time that the Edim testified and that Beis Din gave the verdict, and now we're coming to you, another Beis Din, and saying this guy had run away from that Beis Din, but we wanted to inform you that this is what happened. And of course, you know, they go through the whole cross-examination, the usual, Hareza Yehorig, then we can execute him based on that. We don't need, the new Beis Din doesn't need to look over the evidence and say, well, did the first Beis Din cross-examine the original Edom correctly? So no, we don't do that. So we just say that they're coming with the evidence that in fact this was done in such and such a Beis Din, and they give the other details as well. The Rashash points out they also have to give all the details as usual with Edos. They have to say the exact date and time when this verdict was given, etc. The Rambam actually interestingly says that this din applies only to a Ritzeach. He says when it comes to other Chayv and Mrs. Beis Din, you still have to have the original Edim come to the new Beis Din. So the original Edim, Reuven and Shimon, who actually saw him break Shabbos or do whatever, would have to be there in order to, and then come to another Beis Din and say, we were the ones who testified him against him in such and such a Beis Din, and then he ran away, and now we're coming to you to tell. Only by Ritzeach does the Rambam say we'd have this din, that it doesn't even have to be Reuven and Shimon themselves come, that Levi and Yehuda can come to another Beis Din and testify that based on Reuven and Shimon's testimony, this guy was convicted.
So it's more machmir.
In other words, we're saying that with a Ritzeach, with a Ritzeach, you don't need the original Edim. The original Edim may not even show up. Just other Edim come and say that based on those original Edim, he was convicted, and nevertheless, that's going to be good enough to execute him. Okay. Continues the Mishnah.
But it's more made in a way that you don't have to redo the whole trial. Like in the
either way, you don't have to redo the whole trial. That's what we're saying. Either way, you don't have to redo the whole trial. In the case where Reuben and Shimon themselves come to another Beis Din. It's like this. The Mishnah had said where they come with Oisai Beis Din, where they come in front of that Beis Din. But we're going to see actually in the Gemara that what about if they come to another Beis Din? So here we're saying in the Mishnah that if they come to another Beis Din, on the surface what the Mishnah is saying applies in any Beis Din, the Rambam says only to a Ritzeach. But no, there's no kula there for a Ritzeach. There's a chumrah on him, namely that you don't need the original Edim. Whereas by everybody else you do. The Mishnah continues. Sanhedrin neheges ba'aretz. The Sanhedrin applies in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz La'aretz, meaning the concept of having a Sanhedrin of 23. Which is enough to be mechayiv misa, that as long as you have the Sanhedrin of 71 in the Lishkas HaGozis, then you also need to have a Sanhedrin of 23 anywhere where Jews live, and that would apply in Chutz La'aretz as well. And the Mishnah continues, Sanhedrin ha-hiregis echad b'shavua, if one individual Sanhedrin of 23, that is, or 71, as the case may be, kills somebody once every 7 years, nikras chevlanis. It's called a destructive base sin because, in other words, they should be working so hard to cross-examine the edim and to try to trip them up and to try to cause them to contradict themselves, etc. That if it comes out that they execute somebody even once in every 7 years, then it means that they're not doing their job properly. They're failing to cross-examine the edim strongly enough. The Benyah Yoda points out another point is as well. The Sanhedrin also has the job, as we're going to learn in the next parak, as far as the Kohen Gadol, similar concept, to daven for the people of the generation that this kind of thing shouldn't happen. So therefore, so if they find that they're executing a person even once every 7 years, any individual based in, then it means that they're not doing their job of davening for the people. Now, since you have a Sanhedrin, you have, as we learned in Masech, the Sanhedrin, you have a Sanhedrin of 23 in every city of 120 people or more, then you have a lot of Sanhedrins across Eretz Yisrael. So in aggregate, you could have, if you look across the whole Eretz Yisrael, you can have people being executed fairly often. But any individual based in should be, we're saying over here, not more than 1 7 years. Now, that's, we're saying, they have the responsibility to make sure that they cross-examine the edim strongly enough, etc. Nevertheless, we're not saying that if they killed somebody last year, they're not allowed to again. The fact is, if it does come out, if everything checks out as far as the edim, then if necessary, they kill one after the other. As we learned in Sanhedrin, they can't execute two people on one day, but they can accept in extreme circumstances like Shimon Rashatach and the 80 witches, But they could even be doing every day if that's what happens. But in other words, if they start seeing that they're doing it so often, then they themselves should realize that something is wrong. Rabbi Lozer ben Azariah, I'm echad l'shivim shana. Rabbi Lozer ben Azariah says once in 70 years, and we're going to see in the Gemara what he means by that. The Gemara, the Mishnah continues. Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva Oimrim, Ilu Hayunu v'Sanhedrin. If we were in the Sanhedrin at the time when they were judging Dini Nefoshes, both of them actually were alive when the Beis Hamikdash was still standing. But as we know from Masech Sanhedrin and from other places that it mentions in Shas, 40 years before the Churban Bayis Sheni, the Sanhedrin left the Lishkas Hagozis and moved to Chanuyas and then to Yerushalayim, and then they stopped judging Dini Nefoshes. So Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva were not in the Sanhedrin at the time when they were still judging Dini Nefoshes. Tosfos actually mentions elsewhere that there were rare occasions, even during those 40 years, when they might return to the Lishkas Hagozis for a one-off, but apparently Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva never had the chance to sit on the Sanhedrin for such a thing. Anyway, they said, if we were in the Sanhedrin when Dini Nefoshes were in effect, Loi Nerag Odom Me'olam, nobody would ever be executed, because we would always find ways to cross-examine the edim and ask them something where they wouldn't be able to answer it.
Why they stopped doing Dini Nefoshes?
So we're saying they stopped doing Dini Nefoshes primarily 40 years before the Churban.
Why?
So the Mishnah mentions in Sota, because they were starting to, because Roitzchim, because murderers were starting to proliferate. There were starting to be a lot of people who were murdering others, and then the Sanhedrin decided, the Beis Din HaGadol decided that we can't, even though in principle, Al Pi Halacha, like we just said, they could kill people as many as often as they needed to, but they decided it's getting too much. Practically speaking, it may have also been that some of these people who are doing the killings are too powerful for the Sanhedrin to be able to do much with them. You had Sedukim at that time who were getting powerful. You had other groups like that. So therefore, they figured the better thing is we're going to leave it up to Din Shamayim. We're going to have to leave it up to Hashem to deal with them, and we can't anymore. And by the way, once the Sanhedrin moves away from the Lishkas Hagozis, then all the Sanhedrins all over the country and even in Chutz La'aretz also lose their power to judge Din Nefoshes. There is actually a Yerushalmi that speaks of that this happened already in the times of Shimon ben Shatach, but the Gersa in the Yerushalmi, I think there is not so clear, and I think there are Gersois that say not Dine Nefoshes, but rather Dine Knossos, and the idea would be that temporarily there was a period over there when the Tzedukim are in power during Shimon ben Shatach's times when they couldn't, but afterwards it was restored to them. Shimon ben Shatach lived 100 years, lived well over 100 years before Churban Bayis Sheni. So Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva are saying, if we Ilo Hayunu b'Sanhedrin, Lo Nerag Odom Ha'olam, nobody would ever be killed by the Sanhedrin, because we would always find some way to ask the Edim something that they can't answer, as we'll see examples in the Gemara. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, you know what, with that kind of attitude, that's going to cause more bloodshed among the Jewish people, because nobody's going to be afraid of the Beis Din because they realize that the Beis Din is always going to get them off on technicalities. So therefore, it's another short. Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying that I hear what you're saying. You want to save a Yid's life, but that could backfire. Okay. So the Gemara says, we said in the Mishnah we had the case where they come where the guy comes in front of that same Beis Din. We said ain't so soon as dinner. We don't undo the din. We don't undo the whole verdict and start all over again. We instead execute him based on the original verdict that we said. So the Gemara says, "Lefnei oisa Beis Din hu de'ein soisrin." So we're saying only when he comes in front of that Beis Din, "Hol lefnei Beis Din achar soisrin." It sounds like though if he comes in front of another Beis Din, then we do start all over again. It sounds like the second Beis Din has to start all over and call an edim and see whether we have evidence to convict him. But the Gemara says, how could that be? Hatani Sefer. Don't we continue in the Sefer? Kol Mokum Shiyam Dushnayim V'Yomru. That whenever two Edim come forth and say, Me'idin Onu Asish Pliny Shinigma Dinim Bebastin Pliny or Pliny or Pliny Edub. That when two Edim come to any Bastin and they say that we can testify that we were there in the Bastin when based on Pliny and Pliny's Edus, the Bastin of Pliny convicted him. And then they cross-examine the Edom and they find that everything is correct. So we don't have Soisrinus Dinoi. Here we're talking about in front of another Beis Din. And we're not saying Soisrinus Dinoi. We just say that we go according to the verdict of the original Beis Din. So why in the Reisha of the Mishnah is it using the expression that he came Lefnei Osoi Beis Din? The answer is Amar Abaya, like Kasha. Can be Eretz Yisrael, can be Chutz La'aretz. Because one case is talking about where... One's talking about where it's in Eretz Yisrael itself. He ran from one place in Eretz Yisrael to another place in Eretz Yisrael. Can be Eretz Yisrael, can be Chutz La'aretz. One is where he ran to a Beis Din and he's now present in Eretz Yisrael. Can be Chutz La'aretz, as opposed to if it's in Chutz La'aretz, then in Soisrinus Dinoi, then we just go according to the verdict of the Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael. The Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda ben Destoy Omer, Mishum Rav Shimon Shadach, Borach me'eretz l'chutz la'aretz. If he ran away from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz in Soisrinus Dinoi, then we don't undo the judgment. We assume that what the Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael decided is valid, and we go ahead with that. And the Beis Din in Chutz La'aretz gives him misa mechutz la'aretz. But if he ran away from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael, Soisrinus Dinoi, then we do undo the din Torah and start all over again with the schus of Eretz Yisrael, because of the schus of Eretz Yisrael, that might help that because of the schus of Eretz Yisrael, the dayanim there are going to realize a new factor or something that the dayanim previously did not, and therefore we might end up exonerating him. Now the fact is the Mishnah had used the expression Oisei Beis Din. So how does Oisei Beis Din wind up going from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael? So the Me'iri says, yeah, it could happen. For example, they moved from Chutz La'aretz and moved to Eretz Yisrael. So we're still saying ain't so soon. So then the Mishnah would still be implying because it's Oisei Beis Din. The fact is, it is still the same dayanim. Then therefore, ain't so soon as you know, we don't start all over again. Even though I schus of Eretz Yisrael, nevertheless, because it was Oisei Beis Din, then nevertheless in Soisrinus Dinoi, even though before they were in Chutz La'aretz and now they were in Eretz Yisrael. But if now it's in a different Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael, then Soisrinus Dinoi. And if he goes to Chutz La'aretz or within Eretz Yisrael or within Chutz La'aretz, then ain Soisrinus Dinoi. So in other words, according to the Me'iri's understanding of Or Gemara, the only case where Soisrinus Dinoi would be where he ran from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael and it's a different Beis Din. But any other case, we would say that in Soisrinus Dinoi, and we just judge him based on the original verdict. That's according to the Me'iri. The Ritva explains differently. He says that if he went to Chutz La'aretz or within Eretz Yisrael or within Chutz La'aretz, then we would say it's always considered like the same. Then it's always considered like the same Beis Din. So even if it's another Beis Din, then nevertheless ain't so soon as Dinoi. But if he ran to Eretz Yisrael, then because of Schusa Shal Eretz Yisrael, then we consider no matter what, even if it is the same Beis Din, even if it is the same Dayanim, then so soon as Dinoi. And then the Schusa of Eretz Yisrael says that maybe those original Dayanim who judged him will have another take on it, and they will judge him differently because now they're in Eretz Yisrael, and the course of Eretz Yisrael will help him. As far as this matter, by the way, that we're saying that when they were that Sanhedrin, the Hegas, Ba'aretz of Chutz La'aretz, then the Yad Ramah and Sanhedrin makes a point that that some want to say that this concept that the Sanhedrin Gdola, that only when the Sanhedrin Gdola is in its place, then you have Sanhedrin Ktanas everywhere. And he says that not so. Even when the Sanhedrin Gdola went into Golos from the Lushkas and Gozis, nevertheless, you can still have Bote Dinim of 23 elsewhere. They can't do Dinim Nefoshes anymore because you don't have a Sanhedrin in the Lushkas and Gozis, but they still retain their power, even in Chutz La'aretz. The Mishnah had said Sanhedrin Neheges Cholov. The Sanhedrin applies in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. So the Gemara says, Minohani Mili, where we know that from. Now, the point of the question is, usually we have a rule like this. Only mitzvah satloyes va'aretz apply only in Eretz Yisrael. Usually you have a concept that chovas haguf, mitzvahs that apply individually to a person's guf, apply in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. Only you have mitzvahs that apply to the land, apply only in Eretz Yisrael. So what's the Gemara asking over here about how we know that Sanhedrin applies in Chutz La'aretz? The Gvura Sari explains, because the Pasuk uses the word b'chol moshvei seichem, which you would think means only where you dwell in Eretz Yisrael. Or shoytim chitlacha b'chol sharecha, rather b'chol sharecha in all of your gates. Maybe that means only in the cities in Eretz Yisrael. But yet the Mishnah is telling us it applies in Chutz La'aretz. So how do we know? So the Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa when the Pasuk says about the Ritzeach and about the whole concept of Sanhedrin. V'hoyu elo lachem l'chukas mishpat l'dorei seichem. All of this should be for a statute of judgment for all your generations, and the pasuk continues b'chomer shvei seichem. So lamadnu Sanhedrin. From there we learn that Sanhedrin shenehegas bein ba'aretz shenehegas ba'aretz of chutz la'aretz. That the Sanhedrin applies whether in Eretz Yisrael or in chutz la'aretz. That we learn from the word b'chomer shvei seichem. So then in that case, in Cain, Matam and Loima B'Shorecha, then why at the beginning of Parashas Shoftim does it say Shoftim V'Shoftim Titzin Lo B'Chol Shorecha, or Hagoyis Hagurah changes to, so the Gius that we have in front of us in the Gemara is B'Shorecha, Hagoyis Hagurah changes it to B'Chol Shorecha, like at the beginning of Parashas Shoftim. Anyway, so what does it mean B'Shorecha, which suggests only in your cities in Eretz Yisrael? And the answer is B'Shorecha, because in Eretz Yisrael, Ata Moshev Dinim, Ata Moshev Bate Dinim, B'Chol Pelach or Pelach, or called ear for ear, because what it means is only in Eretz Yisrael do you have to have a based in every Pelach, which means like a region, in every region, called ear for ear, as well as in every city, whereas in Chutz La'aretz, you only need one in every region. You don't need to have one in every individual town in Chutz La'aretz where Jews live. We said in the Mishnah Sanhedrin Hahudagas Chola, we said that if Sanhedrin kills even once in 7 years, then it's a problem. And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had said even if it's once in 70 years. So we have a question. What does Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah mean with that last statement of his? Does he mean that if it's even once in 70 years, then such a base sin is called destructive? So the Tanakhama had said once in 7 years. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says even if they kill once in 70 years, it's also called a base sin chivlanis, a destructive base sin. Once in 70 years is a normal thing. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying the normal expected thing is that a base sin might be executing a person once in 70 years, but not more often than that. So the Gemara says, Teku, we can't be sure what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah meant by that. So maybe he means that a Sanhedrin should really never be killing people, or maybe he means that if they do it once every 70 years, then it's not really so bad. Next, we said in the Mishnah, Reb Taufan and Reb Akiva Omim Iruha Yunuvachola, that Reb Taufan and Reb Akiva say that if we had been in the Sanhedrin when they were doing Dinin Nefashos, nobody would have ever been killed. So the Gemara says, Heichi Havu Avdi, why? How would they have done exactly? What kind of cross examination would they have done of the Edim in order to see to it that the Edim would always get tripped up and they would never be able to answer? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Loza Dami Tabayu, they would ask them, Re'isem Tshrefa Horag Shalem Horag. Have you seen whether the person that he killed was a Tshrefa or was completely intact? Now, if he's a Tshrefa, then they can't be executed because killing a Tshrefa amounts to killing a person who's already dead, and therefore, so even though it's also Minat Torah, you're not allowed to kill, you're not even allowed to do, let's say, euthanasia, a person is on his deathbed, and to kill him, what they call, moosey killing, so-called, as they call it in English, nevertheless, a person wouldn't be chayav misa for that. So they would ask them, do you know whether he was a Tshrefa or whether he was intact? Rav Ashi says even more than that. In Tim Salomah Shalom Hava, they might answer, yes, we know that he was Shalom, that he was perfectly healthy before that. Nevertheless, we can ask him, Duma Bumkim Saif Nekav Hava. Maybe the very place where he stabbed him with the sword, there was a hole before that. Maybe there was a hole in his lung or his esophagus or whatever in that particular place, and now you can't tell anymore because he was stabbed. So you would always be able to, even if you were to examine the body after death, you would still never be able to tell that he had not been a Tshrefa before that. Now Tosfos brings up the point that, wait a minute, we learn in a Gemara in Cholin, actually, that we actually learn from Pesukim that we go according to the Roiv. The Gemara discusses over there, where do we see in the Torah that we can go according to Roiv and we can go according to Chazakah? And the Gemara brings there a number of different things. One point is because we see when it comes to Shechita, you could ask the same question on an animal that was shechted. How do you know that there wasn't a hole in the esophagus or in the windpipe right at the particular point where you shechted and therefore the animal was a Tshrefa? And the answer is that no, we can go according to Torah telling us that we can go according to the Roiv. So then what kind of a question would be to ask the Edim over here? We would tell the other Dayanim should shoot down such a question right away and say that goes against the whole concept in the Torah of Chazakah and of Roiv. First Rabbeinu says that, yeah, obviously we don't mean that we would really be choshish, but nevertheless we could see whether maybe they could contradict each other, or they might say we don't know, and as we learned in Sanhedrin, if they say we don't know, then that's reason enough to throw out the whole Edus. And then Tosfos goes on to discuss that point. In other words, if they say they don't know, would that actually be enough to throw out the Eidos, or would it have to be that they actually contradict one another? So Tosfos goes on and discusses that point in more detail.
Because examination was just to treat them somewhere else, perhaps.
Right. But the Gemara wants to find something where definitely they can never really answer the question. Anyway, then Tosfos says that fine. Anyway, Tosfos also points out that fine, this would take care of Rotzchim. What about other cases? They're saying that there are many cases for which a person is Chayiv Misa. How would they deal with all of those? So Bia Sasuris, the Gemara is going to deal with next. But what about, for example, breaking Shabbos? What about worshipping Avodah Zarah or whatever? So Tosfos says first what it means is that, fine, it doesn't mean Lo Nerek Odom Me'olam, but at least they would make it much, much rarer because they could do all kinds of bedikas and things like that and cause one of them to contradict the other one. Also, Tosfos says another possibility is we would ask them, do you know that, let's say, for example, in the case of Chilul Shabbos, the person that you're testifying against, do you know whether he was a Tshrefa or not? And if they answer, we don't know, then also we don't have a valid Eidos over here, because you have to have Eidos Shati Yochol Azima. It has to be that we can be Mazim the Eidim and give them Vasisim Loikasha Zomam. And if we don't know whether the guy was a Tshrefa or not, then we can't do that. Because again, if they tried to have a Tshrefa killed where it wasn't supposed to happen, then we can't kill them for the same reason, because he's considered already a dead person. So therefore, so that's Tosfos brings that as another possibility of how even when it comes to Shabbos or Avodah Zarah or whatever, how they could prevent a person from being killed, not by asking whether the murder victim, because in that case you're not talking about a murder victim, but you're talking about whether the person himself, who was Mechalel Shabbos or whatever, is a Tefo or not, do you know for sure whether he was or not? And they wouldn't always be able to tell. So that would take care of that. All right, the Gemara asks, "Boil us ever hefi havu avdi." What about in a case where? Where of Arias? How would they? What kind of questions would they ask the Edom to cause them to contradict themselves or to not know in the case of Arias? So the Gemara says. Abaya and Rava, Abaya and Rava both say, they would ask them, Re'isim kemichol b'shveferes. Did you actually see the applicator go into the tube? Which is the Gemara's way of saying, in other words, that the aver of the male going into the place in the female. Or into another male, if it was Mishkav Zach or whatever. The point is that a sheferes is a tube, which actually describes where they would put in, where they would put eye shadow in there. The mikhol is the applicator, a thin thing that they would stick in there to take out some of the dye and apply it to the eye. And therefore, the Gemara uses that as a euphemism for the actual act of relations. Now, the Edom are not going to look at that. So if you ask them, did you actually see mikhol b'sheferes? They're always going to answer that no, we didn't see that. Different explanations. Some of Foshim have, in fact, is another possibility is if the Edom do say, yes, we saw that, then we would also throw out the Edos because they would say that makes you Rishoyim to look at such a thing. You have no business looking at such a thing. So therefore, one way or the other, we could, say that there, that we don't accept their Edos and therefore we don't have a vow, and therefore still Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Taifan are saying that we could still find a way to prevent their Edos from being valid. So the Gemara says, "V'rabbanon heichi daini." Well, the Rabbanon, Rav Shimon Gamliel and our Mishnah, who disagrees with this concept and says that, we ignore that point, so Mela, when it comes to it, it's saying, fine, like Tosfos had said, because we go according to the Chazaka and we go according to the Rav, and most people are not Tefos. And even Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Taifan are only saying that we could ask them that and see whether they trip themselves up. So the Chum was saying we just wouldn't ask them that in the first place. But fine, what about this mikhol b'shveferes business? The fact is that people are not going to look at that, and if they do, then they're rishoyim. So the answer is kishmul. They would do like what Shmuel says. When people are committing znus, when they're committing niyuk, it's enough that we see that they're together, they're lying together, the kiruv vosav, skin to skin, and they're acting like when they're having tashmish. We don't need to actually see the mikhol going into the shveferes in order to convict them of bi'asura. We can still say that the chazaka is, as the Rambam puts it, the chazaka is that once they're in that position, that there's going to be bia, and therefore that's good enough reason to actually do that. There are actually interesting implications of that point lahalacha when it comes to what about, for example, here, you know, it's Sfira now, we're starting to learn the Sefta Soita, so to ask a woman on her husband, would you have the same thing, would you say the same thing, that it's enough mishiro kiminafim, and that's enough reason to ask them, or would there actually need to be kimichol b'shveferes visible in order to ask her? So there's a discussion about that among the Gaonim and the Rishonim and Achronim, about different angles on that. An interesting point also is the Maharsham deals with an interesting question. What if they use a barrier? What if they use the kind of thing that the man puts on his aver in order to prevent contraception, a condom? So would that prevent that it's not considered a bi'asura? The Maharsham points out, you see from this Gemara over here, Mishiro Kamanafim is enough reason to convict them. So now how could that be? Can't we tell the Edom? Yeah, but did you see whether he's wearing one of those things or not? And we don't say that. Therefore, that shows, he says, that that doesn't make a difference, and either way, it's still considered a bi'ah, sort of with or without one. Okay. Hadron alach ketzed eidim. Now, the next parak that we're going to talk about over here is going to be about the we learned in the first Mishnah of the Masechta that you have a case where the Edom come and say about somebody that he's chayiv golus, that he has to go to the Orei Mikla. So now we're going to talk in our parak about all the dinim of when a person has to go to the Orei Miklat or not. The basic rule is going to be that a killer, the shogeg, goes to the Orei Miklat and b'mezid is executed. But as we're going to see, you have different degrees of shogeg. You have what's called shogeg korev oinus. You have where it was a shogeg, but it's practically an oinus because he couldn't possibly have known, as we're going to work out examples of it in the Gemara. You have the opposite shogeg korev mezid, where it was a shogeg, but it's very, very careless of him, and it's almost mezid. And then you have plain shogeg. So what we're going to say is that the one who has to run away to the Orei Miklat is the middle kind of shogeg. So we're going to talk about the parak, yeah, the mezid also goes to the Orei Miklat, and then Beis Din brings him from there, and they judge him and decide what the verdict is. Yeah.
Well, he's like temporarily he goes.
Right, so the temporarily he goes, right, yeah. Yeah, in fact, later on in the parak, the Gemara is going to use the expression, that the Gemara is going to have the expression that in certain places in Eretz Yisrael, Roitzchim were more commonly found, and therefore they had a larger percentage of the Orei Miklat over there. So one point is, what do you mean? The Mezid doesn't go to the Orei Miklat anyhow, and the answer is sure they do. They go first to the Orei Miklat, and then from there, they're brought to Beis Din and judged. Yeah. So the Mishnah says, Elu Heina Golim. The following cases, here are some examples of people who go to Golos. So basically, I heard of Nefesh B'Shogeg, a person who kills somebody B'Shogeg. Now, what are some examples of the kind of shogeg that would get him sent to the Orei Miklat and that would not? And by the way, within the kinds of shogeg that we're talking about, when it's shogeg korev lemezid, then the Orei Miklat are not going to protect him, then it means for the rest of his life he's going to have to watch himself because of the goyel adam. On the other hand, if it was shogeg korev oinus, if it was a kind which is considered an oinus, then he's potter from the Orei Miklat, and he's also potter from the goyel adam getting him. So these are all the details that Beis Din has to work out, and then they're going to tell the goyel adam, yes, you have the right to go after him unless he goes to the Orei Miklat, or yes, you have a right to get him, and he can't even go to the Orei Miklat. It's not going to help him, or no, you have no right to get him. Just accept the fact that sometimes people get killed, and that's that. Okay. So the Mishnah says, Hoya magil b'magila. Suppose, for example, that he was plastering his roof using a magila. A magila means a roller. Rashi describes that the magila was, Rashi describes their roofs in those times were flat, unlike for those. So nowadays, you have also some people have flat roofs, some people have pitched roofs, but in the times of the Gemara, roofs in general were flat. However, you don't want, when you put plaster on it to keep the rain out, you don't want to make the plaster completely flat either, because you want the water to be able to drain off the roof. So you put a little bit of a slope in it. So now what you would do is, so you would use, Rashi describes, a thick, smooth piece of wood with a handle, sort of like a roller, and what you'd do is you'd push it back and forth, and smooth out the plaster and smooth out the whatever it is that makes up the top layer of the roof. You'd go back and forth with that. So now Rashi explains when you're pushing it away from you, that's called ma'agil. When you're pulling it back, it's called moshech. So you're going back and forth. Ma'agil moshech, back and forth motion with it. So now the Mishnah is going to distinguish if he dropped the tool and it landed on somebody and killed him. There's going to be a difference at what point he dropped it, whether he was pushing it away from him or whether he was pulling it towards him. Tosfos describes the magula slightly differently. I mean, it kind of amounts to the same thing, but Tosfos describes, unlike Rashi, who says that it was a thick piece of wood, Tosfos says it was a round and slightly long piece of stone with two long teeth on it, and again they would roll it around on the roof to make it smooth. In any case, Hoya Magil B'Magila, so if he was doing the Magil with the Magila, meaning that he's pushing it away. By the way, there's an interesting explanation that Choni HaMa'agil is so called because that was his job. He would plaster people's roofs, and therefore he was called Ma'agil because of that. We know famously he's called Ma'agil because he made the circle and davened for rain, but there's also an explanation that he was called that because he did this job as well. Anyway, so Hoya Ma'agil B'Magila, so a person was plastering his roof using a Magila, and it fell on somebody else and killed him. Or hoya mashalsha b'chavis, if he's bringing down a barrel off a roof, and it fell on another person who killed him. and killed him. Tosfos says, actually, that what we mean is nafla over here means that he dropped the barrel. So not nifsak, not that the rope broke. If the rope broke, then we're going to have, later on in the parak, we're going to have a machloikus of Rebbe, and we're going to have an opinion of Rebbe that says that in that case he doesn't go into golos. So here we're talking about not that the rope broke, but that he dropped. He was holding on to the rope, and then he let go, and it fell. Another example, hoya yored basulam. Or if he was coming down a ladder, the nafalolav, and he fell on the other person, and he killed the other person, so hareza goyla, in all those cases, he goes to Ori Mikla, because the general rule is it was derech yirida. So as the Mishnah is going to give the general rule, whenever it's derech yirida, whenever it was a downward stroke, and then it caused the other person a downward stroke or a downward motion, and the other person got killed by accident, then he goes to the Ore Mikloi. Tosfos points out there's a loizu afzu over here. Each one is a greater chiddush than the other one. The magil, what do you mean? Why you're not being careful with your magila so you don't drop it? And he was doing the ma'agil where he's pushing it toward the, so Rashi describes he's pushing it towards the slope. In other words, apparently Rashi understands that when a person is doing the ma'agila, he would be standing in the middle of the roof and pushing the ma'agila down the slope, in other words, away from him to make the slope from the slight peak of the roof to make it downward. So therefore it's a downward motion. And the same thing with each of the other one. So not only the ma'agil, then for sure you should be chayv golos because you should have been careful. Even the lowering the barrel where he wants to be careful. He doesn't want the barrel to break. Nevertheless, if it fell, then he's still chayev. And not only that, even he's going down the ladder, he himself is, of course, going to be careful that he shouldn't fall off the ladder. He himself doesn't want to get injured. Nevertheless, he's still chayev golos for falling off the ladder. Because it was, in all cases, because it was derech yirida. The Rama makes a point basically that derech yirida means, in other words, you've got gravity is working together with you. So therefore, you have to be extra careful when you're going down or when you're doing a downward motion or something to make sure that gravity doesn't cause that now it falls down too suddenly and kills somebody. Avil, hoya moshech b'magila, but if he was pulling the magila towards him, which means, in other words, up the slope, away from the edge of the roof and towards the middle, the nafla olav aragasu, and it fell on somebody else and killed him. Or hoya doyla b'chavis, if he's trying to pull up a barrel, so there's a barrel attached to a rope and he's pulling it up, the nifsak achevel and the rope breaks, the nafla olav aragasu, and it falls on somebody and kills him. Or if he's going up a ladder, he fell off the ladder and fell on somebody else and killed him. Then in all those cases, he does not go into Golos. So in all those cases, he does not go into Golos. Zach, wow, because then it's considered more, then it's considered closer to an Oinus. Zach, while the general rule is kol shederech yiridase goyla, anytime when it's going downward, then he would go into golos for the killing. Shaloi bederech yiridase ain't a goyla, but if it's not going downward, if it's going upward, ain't a goyla, then he doesn't go into golos because then it's considered more like an oinus. The Oruch Haner actually brings up an interesting point and discusses at some length, what about if it was neither aliyah nor yirida? What about, for example, he shot an arrow and it hit somebody where he didn't know the person was there and kills him. So it's neither derech aliyah nor derech yirida. So the Oruch Haner goes and discusses that point in some detail, whether he would go into golos or not.
That's really a mistake, but you have to do before you shoot. Something.
Before you shoot, obviously, right. You have to know. Well, we're going to have examples in the Gemara. We're going to have examples in the next couple of dafim. We're going to have, for example, let's say a person is tearing down his wall and throwing stones into the street or into a garbage heap or whatever. When is he responsible to make sure that nobody is there versus when do we not expect, when do we say that it's not expected that anybody's going to be there and he can do it, and therefore if he does hit somebody, then it's considered an onus. We're going to talk about that in the next couple of dafim. Fine. So the Gemara says, Menahani Mili, where do we know this from, that there's a difference between Derech Aliyah and Derech Yirida? Because the pasuk says he knocked it down on him and he died. So we can learn from that. So that applies only when the thing falls on the other person in a way of falling, and therefore we learn from that not derech aliyah. And the point is, even though we have the, and the point is, we still kind of need the svara. We still need the svara because the Rambam had said, because then you have gravity when it's derech yurida, then there's gravity involved as opposed to derech aliyah, then there's gravity either way, of course, but when it's derech aliyah, like you didn't expect it, kamoy onusu, kamoy pelahu, the Rambam says that it's almost like something wondrous, it's like something completely unexpected, as opposed to when you're lowering something and you know that gravity is involved, then you need to be more careful that it doesn't go down too fast. Tosfos similarly phrases it that it's considered kodav loinus. And the point is, in other words, that the Pnei Yeshua says we actually need both. If we didn't have a logic with it, then fakir, we would say the posik is saying even derech yurida is chayiv golos. We would say that in all cases, derech aliyah or derech yurida is chayiv golos. So we need the logic of the Rambam to say that when the Gemara is saying that we hear derech yurida means only derech yurida and not derech aliyah. Well, the Gemara says, Tanarabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says, Vishgoga, the Pasuk says that he killed accidentally, that means Prapla Mazid. That means as opposed to he did Bemazid. Now, the Gemara is going to ask, of course, if it was Bemazid, he's getting executed, we'll see in a second. And when the Pasuk says, Vivli Das, when the Pasuk says, in a different Pasuk, Vivli Das, without knowing, Prapla Mazkavin, that means as opposed to when he intended to hit the other person. So the Gemara says b'mezid pshita b'ktolahu. Of course, if he was b'mezid, then he's chayiv misa. So why do we even need to exclude him? Tosfos says, okay, so why don't you say he was b'mezid and there was no asura? So Tosfos says because then that we could learn from b'bli das, because it means that there was no b'bli das, means that he didn't have the das because he wasn't given asura. Or another possibility is the Pasuk obviously is talking about where he didn't intend at all, so implying any case where he did intend, then he doesn't go to the Orem Miklot, because it makes it clear. It says, V'hu lo yisonei, he didn't hate him, so any case where he's mazid, of course he doesn't go to the Orem Miklot. The answer is Ella Omar Rava. Ella is in parenthesis because Ella doesn't really belong over here. But anyway, Omar Rava, Ema Pratla Oyma Mutter. So rather not Pratla Mazid, but Pratla Oyma Mutter, as opposed to when a person thinks that it's allowed. A person thinks there's no issur in killing. So we don't judge him as a shoygig. We still judge him as a mazid. So he didn't go to the Orem Miklot. Meaning, let's say he never learned that this kind of thing is also. But isn't oyma mutter? Wouldn't he be considered an onus? So then, why are we calling him mazin? Omalei. So Rava says no. Shani oyma. Actually, I would say ha oyma mutter kor of a mazin. A person who's oyma mutter is close to mazin. It's true that he never learned, but still he should be able to. He should have been expected to learn at some point that this kind of thing, to kill another person, is wrong, and therefore we can't call him an actual mazin. We can't give him misa, but nevertheless we also can't send him to the Orem Miklot. In fact, in Sanhedrin, we learned when it comes to Bnei Noach, we don't even say that. Oyma Mutter by Bnei Noach would actually be, we would say, Shehoi Lelumad Lelamad, and by Bnei Noach, there's no such thing, but for the most part, there's no such thing as Shreigig or Mezid, and therefore we'd be Chayiv Misa regardless. The person of Ben Noach thinks that it is Mutter to worship Avodah Zarah, or to do Arayas, or whatever, then he would actually be Chayiv Misa. So here we're saying, we can't be Mechayiv and Misa, but we can't send him to the Orem Miklot either, and the result is he's going to have to watch his back for the rest of his life.
Okay, I was going to say that, person who's a goyel of the relatives are not going to know that he knows he doesn't know, so they're going to
know. No, well, this is all going to be worked out and based in, as we said before, when a person first kills, he goes to the Orem Miklot first. Okay. Then we bring him to based in.
Then decide.
Okay. And then they figure out all the details, and then the goyel adam will be informed what the situation is.
This is included.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There are Rishonim who understand over here that basically when we say Oyma Mutter is basically like what the Gemara elsewhere calls Tinik Shenishba. He grew up, Tosfos has actually mentioned that over here. Tinik Shenishba, Levin Anochim, he grew up among the Goyim, he never learned that there's such a concept. Yeah. So nevertheless, we can still consider him amazed because, there's a quarter of amazed because he should have learned, yeah. Okay. Next, we said Mibli, Bivli Das Prata Miskaven. We said the words Bivli Das means as opposed to where he intends. So again, the question is Miskaven, Pshita Baktolahu. Again, if he intends to hit the other person, then of course he'd be Chayav Misa. And the answer is Amar Rabba, Pratla Miskaven, Largus of Behema, Vahorigus Adam. It means the Braisa is telling us as opposed to where he did intend to hit, but he intended to hit another, he intended to hit an animal, and instead he hit a person. Lakusi, Vahorigus Yisrael, he intended to hit a goy, and instead he hit a yid, Lenafolim, Lenafol, Vahorig Ben Kayama, he intended to kill a baby that's a Nafol, a baby that's anyway not going to survive, and instead he killed a Ben Kayama of a normal, healthy baby. So therefore, in all those cases, he is miskaven. Nevertheless, though, we can't be mechayiv and misa, but nevertheless, we can't send him to the Orei Miklat either, because it's Torah Lemezid, because it's very careless of him. He should have been more careful who he's aiming at. Okay. Turn on our bottom. We learn in a Braisa. Here is more psukim on the subject. The pasuk says, imbefesa. If suddenly... the whole pasuk goes in b'fesa below eva hadafai. If suddenly without any hatred he pushed him down. So now the Gemara is going to the Braisa is going to darshan that part of the pasuk in b'fesa prat l'keren zavis. The word b'fesa means as opposed to a keren zavis, as opposed to a corner. So Pesa, Rashi says, means besamoch, means nearby. So if one person is coming, so if two people are turning the corner, and then one of them is holding a knife, and the other one turns the corner, and he didn't see him, and he kills him with the knife, then we're saying that he wouldn't go to the Orei Miklat for that, because again, it's careless. What is he doing walking around with an open knife? The Rambam similarly phrases that's Kodav Amazin. Yeah, what are you doing? Walking around with an open knife over there, and therefore you wouldn't go to the Orei Miklat. So perhaps the Keren Zavis, so as opposed to a case like that of Keren Zavis. There is actually Beloy Eva, when the pasuk continues, without hatred, prapa soine. That means, as opposed to if he hated him, then we don't say that it's considered, then we don't say that it's considered trade. Oh, so as far as the parents of this actually here. So the Ritva actually has a long discussion over here and explains there are actually two kinds of parents of this. One is, like we just said, where two people are turning the corner and neither one had the chance to see the other one before, and therefore, one of them is holding a knife. So then the Ritzvah learns that he would be Chayav Golos, because neither one could have been careful of the other one. So therefore he has no business walking with an open knife. But then he gives another example called Soif Keren Zavis, where you have the road twists and turns. They could have seen each other from a distance. And now they meet up. Now in this case, he says the person holding the knife would be Potter from Golos, because now the other person should have been careful. He sees another person is walking around with a knife, and he can see him from a distance. So by the time they get closer together, he should realize to stay away from it. So he learns that the prop for Keren Zavis means that actually that there could be a case of Keren Zavis where he's actually Potter from Golos because the other person should have been more careful. So that's Keren Zavis. When it says Beloy Eva means as opposed to a person who hates somebody else. If we know that he hated him, so as we learn in Sanhedrin, the rule with that is they haven't spoken for the last 3 days because they hate each other. Now if he goes and kills him, even Beshergig, then we have to say if there's a suspicion that it might be Kodav Lemezid, that he might have done it in a way that he might have done it Lemezid and pretended to be doing it Beshergig. So therefore we still consider him Kodav Lemezid. We don't send him to the Orei Miklat, and he's going to have to be watching himself all the time from the Goel Adam. Next, Hadofoi, when the Pasuk says that he pushed him, that means Shadofoi Begufoi, that means that he pushed him with his body, he didn't realize that the other person was there, and he pushed him, and he realized that he's there. That could be considered, in other words, that it was Beshoigig, and then he would go to the Orei Miklat. So there is actually some discussion about that. The Kesef Mishnah brings up a point and says that on the face of it, the Braisa seems to be implying that. So Rashi says that in this case he goes into Golos. The Rambam says that not. That in that case, also if he pushed him with his body, would be Korav Lamezid, and the Kesef Mishnah wonders why. Our Braisa seems to be implying that he would go to the Orei Miklot, and he explains that the Rambam understands the Braisa differently and has a different gear in it. And therefore says that in that case it would mean that if he pushed him, then that's already Korav Lamezid, because he should have realized the other person is right next to him. And then the Ritva discusses that all the Braisa is doing is it wants to define what Hadafai means. It means that he pushed. So different understandings of whether in the case where he pushed him with his body and the other guy fell and died, whether it would mean that whether it would mean that he's Chayav Golos or not. This is going to be a Machlokas Rishonim on that. Next, the pasuk continues. Oy hishlich olav. The pasuk continues that he threw something on him. So that would be lahav yirida shitzarech aliyah. That would include a going down for the sake of going up. You have the famous expression yirida tzarech aliyah. That comes from our Gemara over here. Meaning, in other words, here we said in the Mishnah that that a person does not go into Golos where it was Aliyah, where, for example, he's pulling up a barrel and the rope snapped and it fell on the other person and killed him. But sometimes you have a Yerida Tzorech Aliyah. So Rashi describes, for example, let's say you have a person wants to chop wood or something. So what he does is he bends down his body. And then he's going to lift, and then he's going to bend down his body and his arm, and then he's going to lift up in order to bring down the axe with force. So now when he's bringing down the axe and he kills. So now the Yerida was Tzorech Aliyah. It was only for the purpose of the going down to be. So Rashi describes, in other words, like this: when he bends downward then he's going to pull himself upward and have a stronger stroke. Now when he's going downward with that first stroke, it's Yerida, but it's Tzorech Aliyah. It's for the purpose only of then pulling back up and doing a stronger stroke. So then the Braisa is saying that he would still be Chayav Golos for that. It was Tzorech Aliyah, but nevertheless, it was a Yerida, and therefore he'd be Chayav. So therefore he'd be chayiv in that case because the fact is there was a yerida. The Rambam actually learns differently and says that no, that what the Gemara is saying is that yerida tzorech aliyah is not chayiv, that yerida tzorech aliyah is considered part of an aliyah, and therefore that he would actually be potter. So we learn that from the word oyhish lechala. We learn from this yurid tzorech aliyah. And when the pasuk says v'loy tzdiya, that he didn't intend, that he didn't intend, tzdiya is meloshin tzad, meloshin aside. So he didn't intend to throw it in that direction. As opposed to when he threw a stone in one direction, and instead it went in a different direction and killed somebody. So then we're saying that it would be korav la'onus because he didn't know it was going to go in that direction. Next. So that's as far as that one pasuk. So again, we douse in the whole pasuk now. If suddenly, without hatred, he pushed him, or hishlicholav, or he threw on him, kokli b'loitzdiya. So now we've doushin every phrase in that, and we understand from that various dinim of when he's considered shoygig and his chayiv golos, and when not. Now, what about you have another posik v'asher loitzoda, then you have another posik in Parashas Mishpatim, that when loitzoda, and again we're doushin it now. Now Rashi on the posik over there points out that there are a few different ways of understanding the word soda. It can mean that he was looking to trap him, to hunt him, but Rashi says that no, because the word wouldn't be in the form soda, it would be in a different form. So Rashi ends up saying that, yeah, it does mean from the word sad, but Rashi explains it means that he wasn't looking for any sad, he wasn't looking for any way to kill the person, he did it completely accidentally. So here the Gemara is also using the word sada to mean aside, but it means, in other words, the word mean, asher lo tzada, pratam eskaven, lizrik shtayim, v'zorak arba, as opposed to when he intended to throw, for example, a stone, two amos, and instead he threw it four amos. So Rashi says the same thing would be if he intended to throw four and he threw it eight. Either way, the point is that then he would be potter because he didn't intend to throw it over there.
A person who sees that happening, how would they know what he had him out to throw it up. He should be put to
we could see, for example, we could see what force he was trying to throw it with, or he might say, I want to throw this and I want it to land over there, and then it went further than he expected. In fact, Agoyis Agro, by the way, changes the girsa in Rashi, or Agoyis Marav Ranchburg rather says that what Rashi means to say is whether he meant to throw two and through four, or whether he meant to throw four and through two. Not eight, because there'd be no reason to mention eight particularly. It means, in other words, whether it fell short of where he was intending to and killed somebody, or whether it went further and killed. Then either way, we're saying that that's considered korav oinus, and then therefore it's considered korav oinus, and therefore he doesn't go into golos. Now Rashi over here says, that either way he's potter from Golos. And there's Gemara about this in Baba Kama as well, and Rashi gives a different answer, Rashi gives an explanation over there like that, but he also gives another explanation that it just means that he wouldn't be Chayiv Misa. But he wouldn't be Chayiv Misa, but nevertheless he would still have to go to the Ori Mikla. Tosfos over here addresses that explanation of Rashi and says that no, in that case, then all the cases in the Brais over here, we're trying to say cases where he doesn't go to the Orem Mikla, so therefore no, it means that he's Potter from Golos, because it's considered Korav Loinus. Again, how would you tell? The Pashtus, you would have to tell, the Pashtus, the Edim would have to tell based on what, on how, on whether it looked like he was trying to throw it closer or further or whatever, yeah. Next, another relevant pasuk says, "Vasher Yovei Yisraelu Bayar." Another pasuk describes where one person comes with another one into the forest, and then we say he's chopping wood and kills the other person. We're going to talk about in the next Mishnah what exactly happens. We're going to talk about in the next Mishnah and the Gemara. Do we mean that the axe head flew off and killed somebody, or do we mean that a piece of wood flew off of what he was chopping and killed the other person? We'll deal with that tomorrow, Baruch Hashem. But anyway, when it says "Vasher Yovei Yisraelu Bayar," why does it have to mention a forest? We learn from that. Just like a forest, both the Nizik and the Mazik have permission to go in there because it's Hefker. The same way for him to be Chayiv Golos would have to be where the Nizik and the Mazik both have Rishus to be over there. For example, as opposed to, Rashi says, if it was a Chotzer or the Balabais and somebody else walked in and then he killed a Meshugig, then he wouldn't be Chayiv to go. He wouldn't be Chayiv to go to the Ori Mikla. Tosfos brings up the point that you also have, on the other hand, both of them are located there. What about, we're going to learn later on, where if one person is in Rosh HaYachid and the other one is Rosh HaRabim, then he goes into Golos. Why wouldn't he say that they both have to be in a place where the Nizik and the Mazik have the ability to be? And then Tosfos explains that it means that both of them are able to be in the place where the blow happens, not where the thing was thrown off or dropped or flew off or whatever, but the place where it hit has to be a place where the Shus the Nizik or the Mazik, which is why, therefore, in the other case, we have where he's in Rosh HaRabim. Next, Bomine Rabba Bohu Mir Rabbi Yochanan, Hoya Oyla Basulam. What about, asks Rabba Bohu to Rabbi Yochanan, a person is going up a ladder. Now, we learned in the Mishnah that if he's going up a ladder and fell off and killed the other guy, then he's potter, because it's Derech Aliyah. But in this case, V'nishma Tashliva Mitachta V'nafla V'horga, a rung of the ladder fell out from underneath him, and that rung fell on somebody and killed him. Mahu, what would be the din?
He got killed from the rung.
From the rung that fell on him and hit him and killed him. Kihai Gavna, Aliyah he or Yuridihi? Is that considered Derech Aliyah because the person was going up the ladder? Or do we consider it Derech Yuridihi because the rung fell down? And in fact, Rashi points out also when a person is going up a ladder, if it's a wooden ladder, which is all the kind they had in those days, then the rung bends down a little bit under his weight, so therefore it can be considered maybe Derech Yuridia. Amalei, so Rabbi Yechon answers him, Kvarna Gai to be Yuridia Sheet Tzorech Aliyah. Then you're touching on, you're dealing with a case of Yuridia Tzorech Aliyah, and the point is, in other words, that why when the person is going up step by step, why is the rung bending downward to enable him to go upward? So therefore, it's a Yuridia Tzorech Aliyah, and as we talked about before, when Yuridia Tzorech Aliyah, then you have so Rashi had learned that Yuridia Tzorech Aliyah, he would actually be Chayev, and the Rambam learned that he would be Potter. So therefore, so how however you define, whatever the din would be with Yudit Tzarech Aliyah, Rabbi Yochanan tells him you have the same kind of case over here, where therefore it's considered Yudit Tzarech Aliyah, and therefore we said that, so therefore, according to Rashi, he would be Chayiv Golos, and according to the Rambam, he would be Potter.
It's the nature of the wood.
It's the nature of the wood, but nevertheless, yeah. And actually the Cheshek Shloimer of Shloimer Kluger makes a point that really with the person each time, again, there's a tiny bit of Yerida, because each time he steps on the thing, it's bending a little bit underneath him. So he's also going down a little bit. Rabbi Yochanan is saying now that even if you go according to the person, it's also Yerida Tzarech Aliyah. So therefore, according to Rashi, he'd be Chayev because you still have Yerida, and according to the Rambam, he'd be Potter because it's Tzarech Aliyah. The Gemara says Eisei. So that was Rabbi Yochanan's answer. But now Rabbi Abahu questions him. What about an on Mishnah? We said Zaklal Kol Shabederech Yudasa Gola Shaloi Bederech Yudasa Ena Gola. Only when if it's a downward thing is he going into Golos, and if it was a not downward thing then he's not going into Golos. So Shaloi Bederech Yudasa Lasuya Mai. What is the Mishnah adding with the words Shaloi Bederech Yudasa Lavla Isuri Kehay Gavna? Wouldn't it be coming to include this kind of case where it's not Derech Yudasa? The fact is he's going up the ladder, and therefore he should be Potter. So when would we be talking about so in other words, what are you calling it? Yerida Tzarech Aliyah, and saying that he'd be Chayiv Golos because of the Yerida, or Mishnah is implying from the words Shaloi Bederech Yerida, say that no, as long as he's not actually going downward, then he doesn't go into Golos. So the answer is Rabbi Yochanan answers him, Velitai Meich, nu, and according to your Svara that you're asking this question, Kol Shabderech Yudosei Leisui Mai, then what is the Mishnah adding with the words Kol Shabderech Yudosei, anytime that he's going down, then also you have to say, what is that adding? Ella Leisui Katzav, obviously the answer is we're including the case of a butcher, like we said before, where he's bending downward and then he's lifting up his hand behind him and then coming down with force with his blade. The same way, when the Mishnah is saying Shaloi Bederech Yudasa Ena Gola, is coming to include the case of a butcher, and therefore not necessarily talking about going up and down ladders at all. In fact, yes, if the person fell off the ladder, then we'd say, like we said in the Mishnah, it was Derech Aliyasa, so he's not going into Golos. But here, where the rung fell off, then he would be Chayiv Golos because the rung itself fell, and because it was bending under his weight even before that. So therefore we don't say that it's Yerida Tzarech Aliyah, therefore we just call it a Yerida and say that he's Chayiv Golos. The Ritva actually has a different understanding of Rashi. Actually, so no, we'll talk about later. The Gemara is going to later on bring up a point involving whether the rung itself was weak, whether the rung itself was getting wormy and getting hollowed out by worms. The Gemara will make that distinction later, so we'll talk about that later. So the Gemara says, D'tanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa. Katzav shohayim makatzav. If a butcher was chopping meat. So now tana chodel afon of chayev la'akra potter. One braisa says that if he does the motion before him, he kills somebody in front of him, then he'd be chayev la'akra potter. But if it was somebody behind him, then he'd be potter. The tanya idach la'akra of chayev la'fon of potter. Another braisa says the other way around. If it was behind him, he'd be chayev. If it's in front of him, he'd be potter. Another braisa says that in either case he'd be chayev, and according to the fourth braisa, it's saying that in either case he'd be potter. So how do we reconcile what's going on over here? In what cases is he chayev, and in what cases is he potter? So like this, v'loy kasha. So there's no kasha in the four braisas. Can be a reader shall afon of aliyah shall afra. One's talking about where you have a going downward in front of him and a going up behind him. So Rashi describes, in other words, that what you have is, again, he lowers his arm, and then he's going to pick it up. He's going to pick it up very quickly, and then he's going to be banging down with the thing. So can be a reader shalafon of aliyah shalafrov. He's going the downward motion in front of him, and then the going up behind him. So that in that case then. So in that case, then, so now if he kills in front of him when he's bringing down his arm, then he's chayav golos, because that's derech yirida. But if he's doing it on the next, he picks up his arm to go behind him and kills somebody behind him, then he'd be potter, because that's derech aliyah. Can the next braisa said, the next braisa is talking about baliyah shal afan of a yirida shal achrav, the other way around, where he's bringing, he's bringing down his hands, so that he's bringing down so that he can pull it up again. So then it's a yirida tzorech aliyah. So now when he does in front of him, he's potter because it's derech aliyah. So then it's considered derech aliyah. Can be yirida shel afanav shel achrav. The third braisa is talking about the going down behind him in order to hit in front of him, or the going down in front of him to hit behind him. So in either way, he'd be chayav golos, because in either way, it's considered yirida. In either way, it's a going down motion. Can be aliyah shel afanav shel achrav. And the other one is talking about the upward stroke before him and behind him, where they would be potter because it's upward in all four cases. So in other words, it's always going to depend whether it's an upward or a downward motion, and it's also going to depend whether he's doing it for the sake of another motion or not. Because again, Rashi had learned before that Yerida Tzorech Aliyah would be Chayav Golos, even though it's Tzorech Aliyah, but nevertheless, this itself is a Yerida, and therefore, so some cases he'd be Chayav Golos, and some cases he'd be potter. That explanation was all according to Rashi. In other words, Yerida is always going to be Chayiv, even if it's Tzorech Aliyah, and Aliyah is always going to be Potter, even if it's Tzorech Yerida. And then you have different other explanations. Rabbi Hanan all over here explains that it means that again he always picks it up in front of him and puts it in, and when he's doing behind him, he's doing a downward motion behind him. But that would still be considered Derech Aliyah, because even though it's physically going downward, but it's still part of an upward motion. And the Rambam also brings a similar concept, that it also, it depends, in other words, is he doing an upward motion, even though part of it ends up being behind him, going slightly downward, or whether he's doing a downward motion, even though some of it is slightly upward from behind him.
This is like, well, which stuff you see, or this is what we asked the guy?
We asked the guy, or what the Adam see, as the case may be. I mean, the Adam can see it as well. We can also, we'd have the Adim evaluate and see what they saw in Basin, yeah. And then tell Basin what they saw, yeah. Okay, so that's how we reconcile the four braises, is because it depends. You have upward and downward chopping motions, and it depends with which one he killed. Alright, the Gemara says, Lema Katanoi. Can we say that Rabbi Bohu's question about the rung is actually subject to a machloikas tanoi? Because the braise says, Hoya oila basulam, person is going up a ladder, v'nishmat ha-shlivim itachtav, and a rung falls out from beneath him and kills somebody. Tony chana chodachayev, tani edach potter. One braise says he's chayev, one braise says he's potter. My la b'hokam miflegi. Now, wouldn't this be the machlokes? The marsov yuridihi, marsov aliyahi, where both tanoim obviously are accepting what it says in the Mishnah from what we learned from a posik, there's a difference in derech aliyah and derech yurida. So one of them considers it derech yurida because the rung fell down, and because, as we said, it bends under his weight. And the other one considers it derech aliyah because the person is going up the ladder. So in that case, then Rabbi Bohu's question would depend which Tana we follow in the Braisa. And the answer is Loy to Kula Alma Aliyahi. No, we could say both of them agree that it's considered Aliyah. But like Kasha, can the Nizok and can the Golos? The one Braisa, when it's saying that he's Chayev, we need that he's Chayev to pay for the Nezek. Because by Nezek, we don't care about Shergi Gomezid, Odom Mu'ad Lo'ilam. The other one is talking about Golos, and there, by Golos, you only have, by Golos, it would only be when it was Shergi, and when it was Derech Yurida. So that's one way of explaining the braises, Nizikin versus Golos. Ibori say Mahova Holy Golos. Another way of understanding is both of them are saying as far as Golos, that both of them would agree that he's Chayav Golos. Golos Agurah brings up the Rambam, has a gears that both of them Lunizokin. Another possibility is that both of them would be potter from Golos, and they'd be chayv and nizikin. The difference would be whether the rung had become wormy. So when Rashi describes when it's wormy, when it's been hollowed out by worms, then it bends much more when he's stepping on it. Then he bends when he's stepping on it, then it would be considered a yurida. If it's not hitliya, then it's a strong piece of wood. It's not going to bend under his weight, so therefore there's no yurida. So hold the Lyatliya, then there's no Yerida, as opposed to Adatliya, then it would mean that there's Yerida. According to the Rambam that we're talking about Nizokin, the difference is that if Atliya, then it means that he was careless to go up such a ladder, and therefore he'd be chayev in Nizokin, as opposed to if we're saying that if it was Lyatliya, then you can't hold him responsible at all. The boy same, a third possibility is that neither one is it talking about that it became wormy, one is where it's firmly fixed in place and the other one not. So if it's firmly, if it's tightly in place, Rashi also describes, then there's no derech yurid, because it's not going to bend under his weight, as opposed to if loy mihada, if it's not so tightly attached in place, then it's going to go down a little bit when he steps on it, and therefore you have a derech yurid. Tosfos actually learns that another way of understanding this matter of atliya or loy atliya or whatever would be either way it's considered an aliyah. But what we're saying is that when the Braisad said halva halagolus is again yurida sheet sarech aliyah, we're talking about when it went down for the sake of going up, then we're saying that he'd be chayav golus. But if it was not wormy and it was firmly fixed in place and therefore there was no yurida at all, it was purely aliyah, then we're saying that he wouldn't be chayav golus.
Could be pure aliyah, it bends a little bit, right?
But even if it bends a little bit, we don't care if it microscopically bends, we only look at what we see. So if we don't see it bending, then in effect we didn't say that, then we're saying that it didn't bend. The Ritzvah actually brings a different explanation and says that even without Hikliya, nevertheless bends a little bit under the person's weight, but not so much. So he says it really only bends like that only when he's standing on it with both feet. So it wouldn't be considered purely an aliyah. But once we have Hikliya, once we have that there's worms in it, then even when he puts one foot already on it, then it bends underneath him. Now at that point, he hadn't really gone up all the way, therefore you still have a yurida over here. So he says that that's what it means. Then in that case, we would have to draw that distinction between whether he has both feet on it, and only then it bends, and it bends only if atliya versus where it's wormy, and then it bends even when he only has one foot on it. And then he mentions another point as well, after all, it's the rung that falls off that kills the person, but if it's Leah, and you could tell from the outside already that it's wormy, then it was already shogeg korov l'mezid, because what are you doing stepping on something like that? That's obviously wormy like that, as opposed to if not, then he would be a shogeg, and he would go into golos.
Okay. He's on Tyler Gadus, the Goel Haram has no right to get him.
Say what? So that's what we're saying. In the cases where it's Shogeg Korov L'mezid, then the Goel Adam has the right to get him, and he can't go to the Ore Mikla. Where it's pure Shogeg, then he has to go to the Ore Mikla, but the Goel Adam can get him, so he has to stay within the Ore Mikla, otherwise he's in danger. Where it's Shogeg Korov L'Oines, like for example, Derech Aliyah, then he's not chayev to go to Golos at all, and the Goel Adam can't get him. So the Goel Adam will have to be informed by Beis Din. Beis Din will have to go through the various possibilities of what happened over here. The Shoftu Amaka, Shoftu Aida, as the Pasuk says, the Aida, the Beis Din, will have to decide Ben Amaka, Ben Goel Adam, Alam Shpot Meila, about all these matters. They're going to have to take all these factors into consideration and give a verdict. Yes, you have to go to the Ore Mikla, and no, you Goel Adam can't get him, or no, you don't have to go to the Ore Mikla, and you Goel Adam can or can't get him, as the case may be.
So I guess that's why when things are hot, you have to run there.
Yeah. And then later on, Beis Din will work it out, right?